I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. Lighthouse is celebrating its 20th year in business, and we're just entering our seventh year of doing this program. We have a few new exciting changes. First, we have a new 2015 open line format that comes with the launching of our new website. You can also find an archive of past topics on our publication and events tab. Plus, our new book, Cracking the Business Code, is available on Amazon, or you can click on the book icon on our homepage and order a copy. At Lighthouse, we've been rapidly growing over the last 36 months, and you can read more about that on our website. Our topic today is 10 easy steps to increase revenues for your company. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services, and we'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, and we're going to jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, bringing effective insight to your organization. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to help raise the hiring bar and assist companies with a variety of services, including interpersonal coaching, executive onboarding for success, leadership training for the 21st century, exploring global options for expanding your business. And on that topic, by the way, I want to mention we have expanded and have an office now in Taiwan. So for those of you that have offices or manufacturing locations anywhere in Asia and want to provide coaching to any of the staff members there, or want to help them to understand how to work with a U.S.-based company in the most effective way, just let us know. We have a wonderful consultant located there and can pop over to the different countries. Each of our programs helps to avoid getting stuck in shallow waters so our clients have smooth sailing. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations and trade organizations. If you'd like more information, please email me, as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track Open Line series is in response to a number of calls we get from our clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various business issues that most organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen, you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible, so please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. At the conclusion of our program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guest. So you may want to write down two or three questions you can either send in during the program on the chat box, or you can ask once we open up the line. You also want to have some paper and a pen handy to take notes, since we'll be sharing many ideas that you'll want to consider and implement with your team and trusted advisors. Our special guest with us today is Majid Abai, is the Chief Rainmaker at Revenues Rising, a marketing and sales management consultancy based in Los Angeles, California. Majid has 30 years of experience in founding and managing companies and advising various size organizations in the areas of fast growth, marketing, business development, and executive management. An international speaker and published author, Majid has co-authored two books, Data Strategy and Cracking the Business Code. Majid has an entire chapter in our book, which we're really proud of and want to thank Majid for that. And he has published many articles and was an adjunct professor of technology management at UCLA for over 9 years. Majid is frequently invited to provide a number of national and international lectures on a variety of topics. Majid holds a bachelor's degree in computer science with a minor in management and is a fellow of New Westminster College in British Columbia, Canada. I feel privileged to have Majid with us today and to share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of today's program. The topic will be preparing your thought for the day. Majid, welcome back to Open Line. Thank you for being here again.
Thank you so much, Dana, and hello, everybody. Thank you for having me today and spending your valuable time listening to me. I apologize in advance. I have a little bit of a cough today, so if you hear me coughing in the middle of this conversation, please forgive me. And as Dana mentioned, the topic today is what are the 10 different things that you could do really to increase the revenues for the company, for your company. And the general concept for us is that, excuse me, we have noticed in the past, and if you were with us a couple of minutes ago, we have noticed that marketing and sales has changed slightly within the past 10 or 20 years, where the generic throw out a type of a concept advertising is no longer valid, and there are our clients are now, they're located in various different locations. They're either on the internet, they're looking at us on email channels, they can text with us on social networks, or they can reach out to us in different ways. And also the fact that they're in different ages. We have, whether we're doing B2B or we're doing B2C, we're still dealing with human beings. And the human beings that we're dealing with, men and women, they are at different age groups. And depending on their demographics, they are really tuned to different types of messaging. And they're tuned to different types of length for those messages, and they go with different types of channels, as I mentioned, whether it is internet or social network or other ways. So our goal for today is to figure out what are the best clients that we're trying to get to discuss what is the best way to brand ourselves towards those clients, what are the best messages we can provide to them. And how do we target them really, really naturally where they respond to us? And what do we do on our sales process in order to not to have them sign up with us as clients, but also remain our clients for many, many years to come? And how measuring this success continuously will help improve this process. If you do all of this right, we will see that our revenues increase by a definite factor, and we will talk about that. So the first thing that we do normally in our business is that we start with data. Regardless of the type of business that you're in, you have had several years of data about the type of customers that you're dealing with, the type of products that you've been successful in selling, and the information that you're providing is really, really available within your internal databases. In a lot of cases, we see that this information sits within the various databases of our clients, whether it is the ERP system, whether it is the CRM system, whether it is an Excel spreadsheet on the side. And they're not being utilized and they're not being analyzed. So for us, one of the most important things are to really capture that data internally and try to understand our clients and their view of our products much, much better. There is also a lot more information that we can get, whether it is demographics or social behavioral type of a data that we can get about our clients, from the data brokers that are out there or from the internet based on the places that they hang out. So the ability for us to really be able to gather this data from our internal databases, from our external data brokers, and from our external databases, our social networks, Twitters, and information to really build a good view of who purchases it, our services, and who's the one that really wants to deal with us in that manner. So that's the first thing that we always start with our clients. We always start with the data that they have, and then we move on to actually realizing who our customers are. We'd really love to know the best customers for our clients, and I think this is something that we want to know, and you would want to know. And who are our top 20%? We go based on understanding that 20% of our clients really generate 80% of our revenues. And our view is that we can then take that 20% and turn them into 30, 40, 50, 60% of our clients. Who are these people who provide the most of the revenues for us? And how do we really reach out to more of them? One thing we have to always remember is that the best client is not necessarily the highest paying client. The best client for somebody might be paying clients who come back day after day, week after week, month after month, and year after year, and they continuously buy those type of purchases. For some different organizations, that might be different. So the idea is really understanding what is it that provides the best long-term revenue for your customers. A great example that I can use here is the example of Harris Entertainment. And one of the things Harris Entertainment and Casinos did was that they did some analysis, and they realized that the best customers for their business were not what they call the whales or the really big spenders who come in and spend between $100,000 or $1 million in one shot. The best customers were retired women who were above a certain age, maybe about 65, and they would come in on a weekly basis and drop $100 to $200. By doing this analysis, by realizing who their best customers was, it completely changed the strategy of the company. So they moved away from Las Vegas-type mega resorts into smaller local casinos where they would be able to send a bus, bring those folks in, advertise to them, and maybe offer a slightly cheaper room and a free buffet as part of the process, and be able to capture the client at a much, much ROI level, which is what we really would like to know about every single business that we talk to. And we really advise them to understand who their best customers are. And at the same time, we advise them to know who are their worst customers. Because a lot of times, you're spending a lot of resources and time with customers that don't generate that much revenue for you. And sometimes firing those customers will allow you to really increase your revenues because you can focus yourself and or support resources onto the customers that really pay much better. One thing I would like to consider here, I would like you to consider at this moment, is the lifetime value of customers. In my opinion, every executive at any level should be able to tell us what is the lifetime value of a customer for them. And I understand you're all sitting over there saying, no, we have different customers, our business doesn't fit like that, our products or services don't go like that. You can't really define lifetime value of a customer in a right way for our business. I submit to you that it's not necessarily true. And even you have, whether you have one type of service or you have one type of product, or whether you're in manufacturing, whether you're in a service business, whether you're in retail, whether you're in wholesale, whether you're doing B2B or you're doing B2C, there are ways to measure the lifetime value of a typical customer. So the concept is, how much does a customer buy within its lifetime of working with you? So if you have a customer that, and I'll use an example of a CPA firm, if they do tax returns and they charge $3,000 per family to do tax returns, and their average client stays with them for about 10 years, the lifetime value for that customer is $30,000. Now, on the other hand, the same CPA firm could be doing audits for a corporation at the cost of $30,000 a year. And those guys could stay with them for 7 years, you're looking at about $200,000 a year lifetime value for that type of customer. One might be better than the other. I don't know. That is something that we need to know. But the idea around lifetime value of a customer is to see how can we increase it on annual basis. How can we charge our clients a little bit more every year by doing upsell and cross-sells, which we will get to. And the next part of it is that how can we extend the length of the time that they remain our clients? So if they stay with us for 10 years, how do we push them to 12 years? If on average they stay with us for 7 years, how do we push them to 10 years? And those are the things that knowing the lifetime value and utilizing the data that you have would extremely help immediately in increasing your sales within the company.
A question just came in.
Sure.
How does knowing lifetime value of a customer affect an organization's marketing and sales planning?
The sales planning actually a lot more, and we're going to talk about marketing in a second, but let me allude to it in both cases. In case of a sales planning, since I know that my client, for example, has this level of a sales cycle, they will come every year, and I use the same example of a CPA firm. They come in every year, they do taxes, and they do their family taxes with us. So if I know that that's the type of work that I'm going to do for this particular client, then I'm going to try to figure out what are the other types of services that I can provide them within the 10 years, what other kind of support I can provide them in 10 years that I can increase this to be 12 years or 15 years. So that's one. So that's the length of the time. Now I would like to be able to provide services from a CPA firm standpoint that increase this model from a $3,000 a year. Maybe I can give him another half a yearly service that would increase it by another $500 or another $600 per client so that when my accountants in the middle of the year are not that busy with personal taxes, they would be able to increase the revenues. So all of a sudden we went from $3,000 for 10 years to maybe $3,500 to 15 years, which increases the lifetime value tremendously, where we have actually provided a little piece of increase per client. And the same situation applies to marketing. So if you're able to determine that a real bread and butter growth area is those kind of family tax returns that we would like to take, then our messaging would be changed and different in order to really reach out to families who would be able to support us. And so that's essentially, I'll talk more about it, but that's essentially the response to that.
Oh, thank you very much.
Sure. So I would, the way I would recommend going forward is to build a profile of your best customer. What do they look like? What do they act like? Who are they? Where are they sitting? How long they do business with us? What makes us different than the next person? And that's why they come to us. Learn from them the differentiating factors. We'll talk about this in a few minutes, but I would encourage everybody to talk to your top customers at least once every 6 months just to say hi. What are you doing? What is happening? We will talk about that. And you will learn why they like you. And one of the reasons might be is because you pick up the phone and actually talk to them every 6 months. And ask them whether you're selling them the right product. What are the other products that they would like to see? What are the other services that they would like to see? And build a portfolio, a life cycle for that particular profile of a client for its life. So we see a lot of our clients that, and we will talk about it in the upsell and cross-sell section, but we see a number of our clients who do not talk to their customers after they are their clients. And they're not trying to upsell and find out what other services that they can provide to them. So it's very, very, very important to realize that. The second thing that we really like to talk to our clients about and for them to know is the cost of acquisition of a client. And if you're doing $100,000 in marketing a month and you're getting 10 clients a month, the simple math would be that your cost of acquisition is $10,000. But it's a little bit more complicated than that. But at the end of the day, what we would really, really like to know what that cost of acquisition is and to be able to bring it down for our new clients that we're getting and really push the idea towards target marketing where we can really do much, much better work of explaining to them, I mean, measuring what type of a cost we have associated with a new client. So it's very, very important for us to know all this information about our clients. And we'll talk about this a little more in a second. The next thing is, now that you know what clients you want to push, you need to tighten up the idea around your brand. What is that your brand really represents? Dana, at the beginning of this conversation, told us about their mission statement. That's their brand. To me, I don't really care if you're a big company, small company, or startup. The idea at the end of the day is that what kind of a brand are you building? Are you building a brand that you're selling low-cost alternative? Are you a brand that you're selling a high cost but luxury alternative? Are you based on customer service or are you based on just a warehouse type of a sale where customer service is not part of the response? So that is extremely important for us to identify the brand. And I'm not talking necessarily about the logo. I'm not talking about the design of the website. I'm talking about what your company stands for. And when we know what your company stands for, then we would be able to really build a message around it for targeting the type of clients that we want to get. And usually, your profile of the clients, that best clients that you have determined, will tell you what they expect from you. So if I may continue the example or the analogy of the CPA firm, and you know, their focus, let's assuming that their focus is on family tax returns, then we will realize what type of a service they're requiring from us. Do they want customer service? Do they want us to do the bookkeeping for them? Do they want us to really consult with them on how to save money next year? And that will become maybe one of the ways that we define our brand. And remember that your brand will always become your reputation. People will know you. People will know your company because of that brand, because of what you really stand for. And that's what you want to advertise as part of your messaging, which we'll get you in the next page. There is one thing.
Yes. You know, it's interesting you brought that up because I was just talking to a client the other day, and they were mentioning that they were dealing with a vendor, and they said they were really upset. And they said their attitude is terrible. And they said, you know, I don't mind paying a little bit more to have a better attitude, which equates to better service, because that means the person's going to go one step further for them. And I thought that's very interesting you brought that up, because that other organization burned their reputation.
Absolutely. And that's the brand that people will be known for. So a great example of it, and, you know, for all of you who live in Los Angeles, you know what I'm talking about, is that there are some restaurants that are extremely snooty in L.A. So you're going, you're prepared to spend, I don't know, $100, $200 on a meal, and their attitude to you is that as if they're giving you a gift for allowing you to walk in to their store. So the question is, that is their brand. Their brand is, you know, just being extremely exclusive. And the question comes in whether you're interested in utilizing that brand or being a part of that restaurant, or you just go to another place which might be as expensive but would provide you a very good customer service. It would be luxurious, but their view is different than some of the restaurants that we see here. So all of that ends up being a brand. And talking about restaurants, by the way, it's associated with any kind of a service business. don't forget your personal brand. So it is very, we often see that personal brand gets lost within the corporate brand. So if you are a celebrated provider, whether it is product or service, and people would know you because of what you have done, my view is not to hide behind the corporate shield. Don't hide behind the corporate logo. Don't hide behind the corporate brand. Also, extend your brand out there. So, for example, when you see some of these celebrated chefs today, they're not hiding behind the restaurant name. They're actually rising above that. And with that, the brand of the restaurant rises as well. And the same situation applies to attorneys. The same thing applies to doctors. The same thing applies to CPA firms. Any professional services firm will also work the same way, as well as in a lot of product type companies, whether it is B2B or B2C, we would like to really see the CEO or the high-level executive to really be promoted and speaking and really be known across the industry as the thought leaders. So don't forget those brands, your personal brand either, because that would also enhance the brand of the company.
Which, geez, an yes. interesting question just came in on that about the personal branding.
Some, excuse me.
If I can encapsulate this. Some organizations don't want someone to self-aggrandize themselves because they feel they're using it as a platform. So what's the difference between, because it's good to have people, let's say salespeople win the sales award thing for whatever the industry is, and that's a promotional activity then for the entire organization and for themselves. But where is the line of demarcation on that from self-aggrandizement to elevating the organization?
Well, there's a balance in there, and you're absolutely right. Your concern is 100% valid that there would come a time that that person would really rise above the organization. So the idea would be really to create a balancing act, and that's part of the branding of the organization. How much do we want to give leeway to a salesperson or an executive within the company to really go above that particular level? And that's a balance that we need to make. So every time, in my opinion, that as executives we see some of these awards, some of these speaking engagements, some of these cases are really not increasing the brand for the company, we have to stop them so that they know that this is not about them. It's really trying to help the brand of the company increase. So give you an example. We worked with a very large software company, software services company out of Chicago a few years back. And they had one person, and that was the only person in the company, with the exception of the CEO, who was day in and day out, and that was his job, speaking at various software conferences associated with their specific focus subject. And that was it. Nobody else got to speak unless they got special waiver. And that person was designed to do the research and come up with the latest topics and speak at those organizations. And that was how they went about personal branding within their business. And he was known as the guru in the market when it came to that particular subject. So those are the areas that I would think about.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. So after branding comes in the message. Now that you know what you want to be known about, we need to create a simple and consistent message for our target customer. Remember, we're still going after that target customer, that customers who will, who our analysis have shown that they're going to bring us the most revenue. And by the way, I forgot to mention, it is okay that you have different type of targets for different type of products or services that you're providing. So, for example, if I the same CPA firm, they might have two different sets of targets for different two different sets of services that they provide. One service is family tax returns, and the other one is corporate audit. And that is perfectly fine for them to be able to have those two sets, and now they have to develop different messages for each of those services and those target clients. But we have to make sure that we are providing consistent messaging across all channels, whether it is off of our website, whether it is on our emails, whether it is on our social network. It has to be continuous and consistent message from all channels. The other aspect that is extremely important is simplicity of the message. You cannot believe how many times we have walked into organizations and we have sat with the CEO, and in some cases with the whole executive team and the board, and we have gone around one by one and we have asked them to tell us in less than one paragraph what is it that they're selling. And it has never been consistent. It has more than often, it's been quite different. It's been not simple. And they try to fit a lot of things into the same sentence. So we are here to give you something that you can take back. And the key important to this concept is that message addresses only one thing. One thing and one thing. It's not about you. It is about the client. It is about how you resolve the client's pain. So it is as simple as that. Every client has a pain, that's why they're talking to you. And you're solving that problem for them. And you have to be consistent on your message of how we support that. And that's where your messaging comes in. Which takes me to the next level, that there are three things that you want to talk about in your message. And that is your pain, it is the pain, it is the claim, and it's the gain. It is the idea that what is your pain? I have a headache, and we sell aspirin, and your headache will go away should you take our aspirin. And here is this testimonials that we have from all the people who are like you, and they took our aspirin and their headache went away. That's the basic concept of the message. If you're doing this on a website, this has to be shown to people in 7 seconds. And I'm not exaggerating on this. This is actually a scientific number, 7 seconds. You have 7 seconds to tell people what your message is. You address their pain, you tell them how you solve it, and you give them some testimonials about why, or people like them who have had the same experience, and your answer solved. So that's what you want to do. And so make sure your messaging is the same and it is consistent. And regardless of how you present it, at the end of the day, comes out to providing the same result. I want to spend a couple of minutes, and every single one of us have talked about elevator pitches. None of us have talked about elevator rants. So it is very important for you to, number one, yes, make your elevator pitch better. And number two, understand what the elevator rant would be. I'll get to elevator rant in a second. But the idea of elevator pitch, we all know. You have 3 seconds or 10 seconds or 15 seconds to tell what you do. Make it exciting, really. Don't get into the details of what you do, any of that. Your elevator pitch has one function. And the function associated with elevator pitch is to make the other person ask questions. That's all. You want them to ask questions. So anytime, anywhere, you give an elevator pitch and the other person doesn't respond with a question, you haven't done your job. So continuing with my example of the CPA, if somebody says, what do you do for a living in an elevator? And you say, I'm a CPA. That's it. There's nothing else done. But if you follow and say, I save money, thousands of dollars in money for my clients, the next question would be how? And they want to talk to you about it. So that's a simple example of that. But make sure Your elevator pitch focuses on that. On the end of elevator rant, which to me is very, very important, is recognizing your client's pain and be able to respond to it. So for us, elevator rant is when a client walks in, a potential client walks into an elevator and is talking to their friend about a pain that you have. And it is when you can tap their shoulder and say, I can't help you. So if the person is saying that I cannot get a hold of my CPA firm because I got a tax return or IRS is really, really, really bothering me, and the CPA person is sitting over there and taps on the shoulder and says, our firm helps. And that's when you discuss your brand. We are all about customer service. We are always all about immediate response. And we're all are experts at talking with IRS. And that is what you want every single person in your company to be tuned to and be able to really say about that. To be able to say the same thing that way. Please, go ahead.
So what you're suggesting is that everybody in the organization, from the receptionist, customer service, shipping warehouse, doesn't matter what the position is, data entry people, if someone comes up to them wherever they are and says, what do you do? They should have the elevator pitch prepared.
What I'm saying is that they have their own version of the elevator pitch, but for them, I'm actually more interested in elevator rant. So if the person is working in a particular shipping warehouse of a product company and they're talking to somebody and the guy says, what do you do? And I say, I'm in the shipping warehouse of a company. I handle the shipping for a company. And it's not that exciting. But if you are able to say that I handle the shipping for a company that sells this product and, man, they're focused on customer service, that is quite a different way of saying it. The same situation applies to the rant. The same person could be sitting with their buddy somewhere having a beer, and the guy next to them is having trouble, and the guy can just tap him on the shoulder and says, the company that I work for sells the type of product that probably could solve your problem. So I'm in the shipping side. I don't know how the sale goes down. But let me give you the phone number to the main office. You can call. One of the first clients that I got was that way. This is in 1980s. I'm in New Jersey. I just started the company. And I'm on the beach, literally on the beach, getting a suntan, chit-chatting with my buddy over a beer. And people next to us are talking about the fact that they cannot get a technology software running because they couldn't get anybody to really respond to them. And I turned around and said, I run a software consulting company. They ended up being a firehouse in New Jersey, and they ended up recommending us to about five or six of their friends after we finished working with them. And this was something that just the fact of listening to what was coming on worked out for me. And it ended up being a really good business deal that we made that day. So everybody, in my opinion, and we're going to get to that, everybody in the company sells. And they have to know what you're all about. A great example of that, I think there is, and I'm trying to think the name of the book. I know the name of the CEO is Tony C.A., and the company, they sell shoes online. Amazon bought them for, I believe, a little bit over $1 billion. But the idea for this online shoe company was 100% customer service. They'll go above and beyond customer service, which we're going to get to couple of slides. One thing I didn't mention here, please measure the effectiveness of your message. So if it is not working, change it. So if you're giving your pitch to somebody and you see that their reaction wasn't that great, it's time for you to change it. we always want that message to come back to you extremely positive and with an enthusiastic question.
And one more thing before I go to this slide. Also, from a recruiting standpoint, it's really important that everyone have a consistent message to get people to have the excitement and the right attitude. So they'll go, wow, you know, I work in this really cool place where people want to work there and people knocking on the door.
Absolutely. That's the concept of a brand, which I think translates to internal culture of the company and would help generate enthusiasm amongst people who work there. And when they're enthusiastic about the place that they work in, when they know that they're doing something, then they're much more enthusiastic to talk about. So I recommend every single client to, when people come in, have it, if not a day, half a day to teach them about the brand of the company, the message of the company, what company stands for, and really encourage them to ask questions and understand that much, much better. And that just when people come in, it would make all the difference because they know what they're trying to do here.
Yeah. Also, somebody just put a question in, but maybe I'm going to ask the person to put a little more information. They just put in Zappos, and I'm not sure what.
Oh, Zappos. That is Zappos. Thank you very much. That's the name of the company I couldn't think about.
Okay. Thank you. There we go. Okay.
Thank you very much. It is Zappos. I appreciate it, sir.
Thank you. Okay. On to step five.
All right. So step five is really about target marketing. I call it stay away from the masses. My point is don't just send a broadcast message that would attract everybody. It is all about target marketing these days. So when you have identified your target markets, when you know where they're sitting and what they're doing, really, really put your message towards that type of a market and really go after them. And one of the examples that I always use is to go narrow, go big. The idea being that people these days are not really looking for generalists. They're looking for specialists around one or two subjects. And if you're able to say that we are specialists around one or two or three subjects, then you will see them really respond to you because then you're directly addressing your pain. I'd like to give you an example of one of our clients that we had a couple of years ago, goes back about 3 to 4 years. They were a management consulting business focused on change management. And they had a year where the sales were flat. They were still doing decent sales. They had consultants all over the country, but the sales had remained flat. So they consulted with us, and our goal was that from a messaging, it was really hard for a CEO of an organization to really capture change management because it's just so bad that it wouldn't directly address their pain. So after working with them for a while, now their focus is purely on family businesses. And they focus on three areas of family business. It is succession planning, conflict resolution, and really growth of family business, and the sales have just gone up simply because they were narrow, and they established themselves as really the experts within those narrow fields. If somebody comes in and is looking for change management consultants somewhere, they can always do that, but the target marketing is really, really around family businesses. The other thing to think about is to research and find similar customer profiles. So the idea is that if you have clients, if you are selling to audio owners, if you have a product that really works well with audio owners, there is a potential that BMW owners and Mercedes-Benz and Porsche owners, they might be interested in as well. So you want to expand your circle and actually think out of that box, really based on your message and the way you're targeting and the way you're going after them. And remember, your clients are in various age groups. So some of them really deal with social networks. Some of them deal with the old print model. So you have to mix it up. And by mixing it up, you would be able to really find out what type of a combination works in some of the cases. So, for example, one of our partners, they are an email marketing company, and they have learned that email alone doesn't work. And they have a process where they send so many emails, then they transfer to snail mail, and excuse me, then they continue on back to the email, and they've seen that has been one of the most effective ways of doing this. And I want to just remind you of something. It is okay to say no to customers who would not necessarily be good customers, and they would drag you down. And it is fine for you to be able to and empower your sales team to really say no to sales that would take away your focus. So, and that's an individual company decision, and I know that's a hard thing to say when somebody's willing to give you cash. But in a lot of cases, they really might drag you down. So you might want to say that we just won't sell to those type of customers. It's just not part of our brand. So our next step is all about online and online marketing. We have a trademark called Exist Online. And we encourage all of our client companies to have presence in different areas of online. And let me tell you something, that we're not necessarily encouraging what everybody else is doing. So we want you to really look, think out of the box. Part of that is being online is not simply doing or marketing online is more than doing search engine optimization or running ads on Google. Really, there's a lot more. So there's a lot you can do to help with that, and we're not discouraging from doing that, but it goes way beyond just search engine optimization, Google ads, or just ads. One of the things you should do, which a number of companies that we work with don't do, is to really be present at local directories that are available online. There are services that will put you there. There are services that will maintain you there. We do that kind of a service that they will put you on about 50 to 100, excuse me, different local directories regardless of where you're selling. And those directories would really help you pop up when some of those searches are being done. So I would strongly encourage you to be able to explore and put your name, it is like the old way of doing Yellow Pages, at much less cost to the company. Use social media. And in case of social media, a number of companies these days, they do have a Facebook page, they're present on LinkedIn, they might have a Twitter account. I'm a little bit more selective. Depending on the type of product or service that I would sell, I would be less inclined to be in one or two or the other one. Just to let you know, there's a great way to find clients off of LinkedIn. There are great ways to find clients off of Facebook, depending on the type of products or services you sell. Twitter is a great place to really get involved with. If you're dealing with younger generation of customers, they won't be on Facebook. I promise you they will be on Instagram. And they're dealing with other type of social networks, which you need to be aware of. The other thing that you need to think about is to be present where your client is present, which depending on what you need to do is very, very important. So if you are, I'll go back to my CPA firm, and if you're looking to find if you're looking to find particular clients, then I want to be present on social networks and websites where people are posting their questions vis-a-vis IRS. If you want to, you might want to be on areas where people have questions that you can respond to and be present and really show your ad on those pages about doing taxes. So what you want to do is really find out where your potential clients hang out online, what type of searches, what kind of postings, what kind of videos that they're looking at, and be able for you to really respond to it and establish yourself as the person who can help with their pain. It's a very important concept on thinking mobile. As of 2014, mobile surpassed desktop and laptop searches. So people are doing more searches off of their mobile devices than they have been doing ever in the past, and more than they have been doing on their desktop or laptop computers. That's important, tremendously important for what you need to do, because you want your ads to be present. If you're doing any kind of ad, if you're doing any kind of search, you want to be present via mobile devices. What does that mean? That means you want your website to be mobile ready. You want your responses to be able to work that way as well. So it is very, very important for you to think about where your process is going to take you when it comes to the mobile. I'm not suggesting for you to run away and build a mobile app. That is not what I'm suggesting. I'm really suggesting at the minimum to really consider how your web looks on the mobile devices so that the potential client doesn't go away. And the last thing we're saying is to continuously connect with your clients and potential clients. So if you have a Facebook page, if you have a LinkedIn page, if you have a Twitter, if you have any kind of an account, make sure that you're continuously updating and providing new information to them, something interesting that they're interested in looking at, something that is more, they're much more inclined to look at a video, look at a picture, they're look at a very short audio message than to read an article. So you want to really, really make sure that you have that kind of a presence and you're connecting with them. And the fact that if you have an email marketing platform, you're sending them some sort of a monthly note and monthly email for them to really remember you, and should they need you, to pick up the phone and to contact you. I'm going to spend a few minutes and talk about sales. A lot of times we see that the sales process is completely disconnected from marketing, and our view is that the two of them are just attached. They're two different functions, but they need to follow each other. And a lot of times we are seeing that there is a total disconnect between the strategy and direction of the company and what salespeople of the company are selling. So number one, as we discussed before, in my opinion, everybody is a salesperson at a company. And it makes a lot of difference of what you do and will increase the revenues tremendously. Specifically, people who actually touch customers. So the example that Dana used a few minutes ago of the person who is in the shipping or warehouse, yes, that person has probably has a less message. But the person who answers the phone, the person who is dealing on the customer end, the person who is the receptionist as they walk in, they all make an impression on a potential customer. And every single one of them really needs to be trained on how to deal with a customer. A great example that I have that I'd like to share with you was that a few years ago we were supporting this set of dental offices. And we were listening in on, you know, the way the calls were being handled, and they were responding. And in every single case that we saw, the client was a potential client would call and say, I need this procedure done. And the receptionist says, I need this procedure done and how much it would cost. The receptionist says, I can't give you an answer. You have to come see the doctor. And the person would hang up. One office, when the person says, I need that procedure done, became extremely personal in a good way, saying, oh, do you have pain? How is your feeling going? Have you had the pain? What have you done about it? Have you spoken to any other dentists? How about your regular dentist? And based on that, they established that personal connection. The person became a client and then was no longer concerned about the price. As a matter of fact, they paid a lot more than the average price that the other offices would have charged just because of that personal connection that they had with that person who responded to the phone. So it's extremely important these people to know that all of these people are some of the lowest paid members of our team. They're extremely valuable in our sales process. Talk about sales process. It is very important to have a sales process. I don't care if you use Sandler's sales method, solution selling method, or you have your own in-house method. It is a method that needs to be established. It is a method that needs to be followed, and it's a method that needs to be tracked so that every single person who comes in and is part of the sales cycle, they really follow the same method. So that when you're talking about and you're finding out that somebody's at that stage of sales process, you are being given as the executive of the company the real example that is necessary. I'm sorry, not the real example, the real feedback that is necessary for you to make a decision on how to move forward with that. And therefore, when your salespeople have been trained on the messages, values, and your brand, they know your products, they know the type of customers that you're going through, and now you have an extremely well-defined sales process, then things will go through smoothly, and you're able to, at a very, very early stage, realize that which are the clients that you want and which are that are worth following up with and which are the clients that are going to drag you probably and not buy after X number of phone calls. So please be cognizant into really establishing those type of sales processes and sticking with it.
An interesting comment just came in from somebody that this goes for customer retention too, not just customer acquisition. I know an organization that just lost a good customer because of the accounts receivable billings person's approach to a simple problem with that customer's account, and they lost them. So interesting point.
Thank you for that point. That's absolutely correct. You're so correct. Because one bad experience will make a customer really go away, where a better experience could really change the experience totally around, make a lifetime customer out of that potential client or client, existing client, and really continue going. Great example. Thank you. One thing that I recommend to everybody is to use a CRM. There are very, very low-cost inexpensive CRMs out in the market that in today's world, there is no reason for us not to do it. There are, of course, the most expensive ones out there as well that one can use it, but there are some simple, easy, starter type of points that you can start and implement with minimal customization and minimal cost that there is no reason for any client anywhere, any company anywhere, not to use a CRM tool. So that is very, very important. Make sure you do it. Make sure you train your salespeople on it. Make sure you manage everything that needs to be done that is being entered into the CRM so that you have a centralized tracking of your potential clients and you can follow up with them better. And then track everything. Make sure you track why people are dropping out somewhere along the line, what kind of phone calls have been made, what kind of emails have been sent out, how many times a client has been reached. Some clients, sometimes sales cycles are short. Some companies' sales cycles are longer. And for the ones that are longer or they're midterm, it is much easier utilizing a tool and tracking and following up and making sure that they are progressing, inching closer based on our sales method to really becoming a client.
Two questions just came in. And by the way, normally our open lines go between 50 minutes to an hour. This is a big topic, so we're going to go a little over today. But we do have two questions here. What's a good, very inexpensive CRM, and can you please suggest a CRM that you prefer?
There are different ones out there. One of the ones that I think the lowest cost with a good bang for the buck is Zoho, that I have used, and I know a number of other folks who use it. It is now owned by Google. If I am correct, I could be wrong. And it is very simple, easy to implement, and charges are absolutely nominal. I think one or two is free, so I suggest you download it and play with it. And then after that, it's a very, very small level. Then the next question comes in of what is my favorite? I don't have a particular favorite. I think it depends on the size of the company, number of salespeople, connection that you need to make to the accounting or ERP tools. If you have an investment in some particular sort of CRM there. So there's a lot of variety for larger organizations that would come in. But for a good starting note, until you find out what are the things that you want Zoho with you.
Majid, a couple questions. Actually, people are sending the same question. Could you spell the first CRM? Was it Zoho? Or
Zoho is Z as zebra, O as Oscar, H as Harry, and O as Oscar.
Okay, say
I
one
hope
more time.
I'm doing this right.
Say
Z as zebra, O as Oscar, H as Harry, O as Oscar.
Okay, great. I had a number of people threw the question right away. Also, there's Sugar CRM. I mean, the list goes on and on. So if
right.
you want to talk to Majid offline about that, because CRMs are – it's a huge topic.
Right. We should have a completely separate conversation on CRM.
Yeah.
I'm just suggesting that use a tool and a centralized tool so that people don't have their own spreadsheet and they're utilizing it all differently and – they don't track the phone calls because they got onto another call. No, I'm really saying something that they're able to track everything through the communications. And you can log in as the manager and be able to know what they're talking about. Then the last thing is change the compensation plan. Your compensation plan sometimes were established 10 years ago, and they had nothing to do with what you do today. They have nothing to do with the target market that you want to go forward. So, for example, we were advising a company, and they had realized that their new sales were only 16% of all the sales. And they were doing 84% to recurring sales. So the idea was that the salesperson would wake up in the morning and call 10 clients and go back to sleep, simply because they weren't being compensated anything on new sales. So as long as they made their quota, they made their money, and we immediately suggested the change of that compensation plan. And they got a lot more bonuses associated with new clients than they would ever get. So they changed their attitude, and that changed their culture, and they were selling a lot more. I'm going to not spend too much time in here, but I'm going to tell you about, don't forget about upselling and cross-selling. A lot of times we need to establish a relationship with our client. We need to establish what is the other products or services that we can sell to those clients. And it should really be part of our sales process. So when we sign up this client, we know that 3 months from now we're going to make a call and we're going to try to sell them product B. And 6 months later, we're going to make a call, and we're going to try to sell them product C. And really make sure that depending on your organization, whether your salespeople are still dealing with your existing customers or you have a customer service department that manages the customer existing customers, you always, always, always want to have a compensation plan associated with upselling and cross-selling, because this upselling and cross-selling ties back to what we started with, which was the lifetime value of the customer. We want to make sure that the customer remains with us and doesn't go anywhere. And step 9 is measuring success. So when we start this process, we want to know what success looks like, whether it is getting 10 clients, whether it is getting 50 clients, whatever that is. We need to be able to have a measure, whether it is a revenue base, whether it is a number of client base, whether it is anything that we want to do. We need to know where we're starting from in order for us to be able to know whether we've been successful. And therefore, we need to make sure that we capture data in every step so that we can easily change our approach. If we are not doing the right thing, we need to be able to change it and go forward and build KPIs that really show you whether you're going towards the right direction or not. And these are both lagging KPIs and forward-looking KPIs. So I'll give you some examples of that. So for lagging KPIs, if in order for us to make $50,000 this month, we need to make 100 calls. And off of those 100 calls, we're going to send 10 quotes. And off of those 10 quotes, we're going to get 4 new clients. And those 4 clients will take maybe a month or two to close. Then we want to make sure that our sales team are making those 100 calls. We are getting those 50 meetings. We are getting those 10 calls going forward for this month. So those are the lagging ones. And the forward-looking ones is that if we don't do them this month, then there's a good possibility that 2 months from now, we will not have the cash flow revenue that we're expecting. So those are the things that we really, really need to measure on monthly basis or daily basis, however you want to break it down. My view is that I want to make sure that the calls, at least, are measured on daily basis and revenues on weekly basis or close rates or quota rates on daily basis. But I would never, never suggest waiting for a month for that kind.
We had actually a couple of people, probably half dozen people, ask about KPIs. Could you define it? And some people are very familiar, some people aren't.
Of course. KPIs, or they stand for key performance indicators. And I apologize if I'm getting a little bit off the subject in here. But the KPIs are the measurements of your success within the company. And the same way that you have a dashboard in front of you in a car while you're driving or the gadgets that one sees on a plane, KPIs are the measurements that will tell you whether your business is operating well or it doesn't. And they break down into multiple categories, but two major categories are lagging and forward-looking. So, for example, for forward-looking, if the economy, if you are the type of business that economy affects it, then you want to know that if price of oil goes up, your vendors are going to start charging you money more for the deliveries that you're doing, and therefore your cost will go up. So you're always measuring track on price of oil because, you know, 3 months later it's going to hit you. And on the lagging side is that if you don't close $50,000 worth of customers today, since it takes us about 60 days to cash in, we will have a cash flow problem in 2 months. And those are the KPI, that's a KPI example that you would like to know. So these are the measurements that you take off of your business. And if you have specific questions, I'll be more than happy to answer those as well.
Oh, thank you.
And the last step in here is to be ready to change things up. You really cannot put in all of this in and say, okay, I'm going to come measure it a year later. You have to be agile, and you have to be able to really see where it works and where it doesn't work. And if some of the messages, target marketing, ideas, social networks, is not working, to change them up, and that's okay. It's better than putting money down the drain without getting any kind of an answer. The easiest thing that we have seen, actually, is that we have seen a lot of people doing the same ad off of the just Google ad, and never changing them up. And when we look at them, we see that maybe about a year ago, this particular message or this particular ad has never worked. But they have been paying Google for it for about a year. So be ready to change. Introduce new approaches every once in a while, because you want to change things up. And, you know, if you haven't done PR, start doing PR. If you haven't been on social networks, go on social networks. And really be present for the new approaches that you take. And really get out of your box. If you're a conservative company, every once in a while, the fact of having an ad that is not that conservative would really, really help. Give you an example. A few years ago, we did something with Susan G. Komen for cancer, the ones who do breast cancer awareness, for the Breast Cancer Awareness Month, where we had a flash portal coming for 24 hours. Over a million people signed up, and we didn't do any advertising anywhere. But the fact that they went through their social media, everybody else that we knew went through their social media, this became a viral concept. And people from all over the world, and we had a heat map of where people showed up from all over the world. And they got a lot of traction associated with social media presence within only 24 hours. From, I believe, 12 o'clock September, 12 a.m., September 30th, all the way up to 11:59 September 30th. And it's just something that they needed to do. Don't forget other channels. You have a lot of other channels you can sell for you. I really suggest that you think about what are the other services that you can provide to vendors who are selling to the same clients that you're trying to sell, and maybe they can help you sell some of your products. And don't be shy. Customers who love you, they love to refer you to other people, so ask for referrals. Really be open and honest, and ask your salespeople to be open and honest, and say, you know, we're looking for referrals. I hope you can look into your Rolodex, in this case, you know, iPhone, and pick three or four that can help us, that we might be able to help them. And it usually makes a lot of difference when you ask them on one-on-one basis to make those referrals. So don't be shy. So this is my topics that I wanted to cover for today. I apologize that we ran a little bit late. And I can't thank you enough for attending this webinar today. I hope this was helpful to you.
Well,
I am. I'm sorry. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Majid, so much for the thoughts you shared. We're going to open up the line in just a second. For those of you on the screen right now, you can sign up for our next program, Preparing Your Thought for the Day, and it's going to be held on March 24th. It should be a wonderful program. And again, I want to thank Majid and everybody for attending today. This was very rich data. Please feel free to share it. Call Majid offline on the topic of CRM or any of the topics to get more in-depth conversation going on it. But let me shut the recording equipment off here, and then we'll open the line so you can ask questions directly to Majid. Just one second.